Jennifer Zamparelli on 2FM.
Sponsored by Virgin Mobile. We'll tell you when your phone is paid off. Virgin Mobile. Bring on amazing.
Now it is time for sex therapy, and I have to say, a little ears warning. I know some kids are off school, so just send them to their room or put them outside or do something safe with them, but they should not be listening to this. You can catch this chat on our podcast after the show. Are we ready?
Warning.
The following item is not recommended for little ears.
Because it's time for a dose of sex therapy with Rachel Cook.
Yes, and every week we are actually inundated with listeners' queries. So we're actually going to do a Q&A with Rachel Cook, who is right here, right now. You can text me if you have any queries or anything you want me to put to her, 51552. Rachel Cook, good morning.
Hiya, Jen. Have you got some juicy stuff for us this morning?
You are going to love this. I love this because we put out a call out, and obviously we get messages all the time, but there's such a broad range of problems.
So many and questions, so much confusion, so many possibilities.
Yes, indeedy. So let's kick off, because there's a lot to get through. This person says, I am 4 months post-baby, have not had sex with my husband since. We had a very traumatic birth and I feel I might still be affected by it. My husband is a gent and is very understanding. Should I seek more help on this? 4 months, is that normal? Is that not, Rachel? What do you think?
So first off, I'd say, the person has mentioned a very traumatic birth, yeah, which automatically says to me you'd probably be better off getting some extra help. You know, if you've described it as that and you think it might still be impacting you, probably what you mean is it is still definitely impacting you.
Yeah.
So go and get some extra support on
now
that.
Now, you say support on that. Straight to the GP?
Straight to the GP or straight to a sex therapist. You know, now there are people who are specialised specifically in working with traumatic birth, because obviously not every therapist, you know, most sex therapists would have some experience that, but some now really specialise specifically in birth trauma.
Wow.
So that's a growing thing, you know, because it's something that's massively downplayed because, you know, so many people give birth. But a lot of people have traumatic births, or even if the birth itself wasn't that traumatic, it might be the aftermath. It might be that they had postpartum depression. It could be that they have complications physically after the birth. So there's loads of reasons to do that. But the other thing I would say about that question is, what's your definition of sex here? A lot of people, their definition of sex is penis and vagina, when actually you could be having all loads of other types of sex, where it might be just the person who gave birth performing oral sex on her partner.
Yeah.
For instance, you know, it doesn't have to be sexual intercourse for it to constitute a time that was fun and enjoyable.
And another thing is, if somebody had a traumatic birth,
yeah,
years ago,
yep,
and it could still affect them now, don't be afraid to go seek help now, even though that birth was years ago. I mean, that
big
still
time
could be affecting.
That could be come up. I know people where it's come up 20 years later, something,
yeah,
has triggered the trauma of their birth decades before. It's never too late. It's a bit like when people say about conversations, like, oh, it's too late to talk about that. It is never too late to bring it up if it is something that is meaningful, impactful to you.
Okay.
So,
to go seek help. This is interesting. I have no sex drive, this,
yep,
person says. I love my partner to bits, but we are with each other 3 years, but I have no interest in sex at all. Not just with him, but in general. I don't seem to have any interest in sex. How can I change this? I don't want him to feel unwanted.
Oh, you know, that's a hard one. It's like, did you ever have a sex drive? This person hasn't actually said. So they've said they don't have a sex drive in general, but they haven't said if that's a recent thing that they feel they don't have a sex drive in general, or if maybe they've never had a sex drive. If they haven't, they could be on the asexuality spectrum. I would definitely look into that, start reading about that. If they did used to have a sex drive, then look at what's maybe happened. Has this been something where it's been slowly waning over time? Is it to do with, you know, there's all sorts of reasons we lose our sex drive. It could be anxiety. It could be medication that they're taking. It could be trauma, it could be shame. You talk to your partner, check in with them. You know, are they feeling bad about it? Are they, you know, this person has said they don't
want
them to
feel. Are you feeling bad about it,
yeah,
that person who texts in? Like,
yeah.
Because I think the real telling thing there is, I don't want him to feel unwanted. That,
yes,
surely isn't a reason to have sex.
No, It is not. I mean, sometimes I think there's compromise, right? Compromise can be a bit of a dirty word in relationships. But I think, you know, everything is about negotiation, realistically, yeah. when we're talking about dealing with other people. And so there will be times where one person wants to have more sex, one person wants to do certain things. That's going to happen whether someone has zero sex drive, a high sex drive, a medium sex drive, or is asexual. And like, you know, so... So I think talk to the person.
Okay. I've been seeing a girl since January. We were great together, start to finish. Eventually, she pushed me to meet the parents. I was so happy to do so. Met twice over a weekend for dinner and to their 40th wedding anniversary. Big steps in our relationship. Then she ended it 2 days later and the parents were mad about me. Like, what's going on there? She was hurt in the past. Now she's done the same to me.
Oh, this poor person. That sounds horrendous. You know, I would say here, we don't have enough information. I'm guessing this person is asking, why did she do that? And we don't have enough information. She could have felt huge pressure to get married from her parents. She might have been sort of testing that out. She might have felt very inadequate. Maybe she felt jealous. You know, there could be literally anything going on here. And it sounds like they're just this person. You know, often when I hear people say we were having a great relationship, you talk to the other person, you'll have seen this on shows like First Dates. One person will say, I had an amazing time, I think we got on great. And the other person's like, nah, I definitely don't want to see this person again. So, you know, just because you were having a good time doesn't necessarily mean the other person was, you know, it totally in it with you. Now, that's not to say you should be doubting the other person all the time, but just communicate more, check in with the person. Now, sometimes they don't have the maturity or the courage or the you know, they're not emotionally in the right place to be able to say, look, this isn't working for me. So instead, they might just set up some sort of test, as this might have been, and then ghost you, dump you, whatever. But we just, you know.
Ghosting is so common.
It's so common.
I mean, you said something really interesting there, that you could be having the great time, but you don't know if that's not necessarily true for the other person, that yep. they're having an equal amount of a good time. And ghosting is so, so common. And if that happens after, a one-night stand or, you know, a relationship, what should the person do? Should you confront that person?
I think you have a choice. If you feel like, I would say don't ever confront someone or call them out in the hopes that you're going to get a certain response back from them, because that's just you're bound to be disappointed. But if you're doing it for yourself because you want to feel a sense of empowerment that you have acknowledged actually how that made you feel and that's not behavior that works for you, then absolutely say to the person, look, you know, I don't know what's going on for you, but it really wasn't cool that you ghosted me. I don't appreciate that. If you're open to potentially opening up the lines of communication again, then you can say, I'm here if you want to chat, but we're going to need to be, you know, a lot more frank. Okay. If you're not, you can just say, you know, I hope you're not going to continue to do this because it hurts.
Okay, good advice. This texter says, I don't want to give my name, but my boyfriend struggles to ejaculate during sex. It always usually ends up with me having to finish him off. I don't mind this as I love foreplay, but it's worrying me that when the time comes for having babies, this will be a problem. Is there anything that we can do here?
Oh my God. You can talk. You can talk about
you
it.
You and your bleeding.
You know,
talking.
This one, chat. Some people simply don't get the right kind of stimulation from penis and vagina sex to ejaculate. And so that's actually, you know, it's not one of the most common things, but it's certainly not a particularly rare thing to happen. So, you know, you might talk about the type of stimulation. Also, there could be other things. Maybe he's afraid of you getting pregnant. That could be a thing. Maybe that's actually been on his mind loads and he's worried about that. And so it's sort of psychologically stopping him from being able to ejaculate.
Gotcha.
So that could be having a chat about that. Also, if it's that you're genuinely worried about getting pregnant, there's loads of pretty easy ways to insert sperm without it needing to come direct from the penis.
Absolutely. Question for Rachel. This person says, my 11-year-old son is starting to ask about sex. He's very innocent, unsure of how much or how to explain it to him. Any tips here?
Oh, so many. But the most obvious one is really to get some books and read them together,
Okay. Separate
and together. And also ask him what he thinks and what he knows about certain things. You know, I think we've talked about this a good few times before. Is like, it's great to just sit down and find out what your kid knows already, what they've been hearing at school. It's possibly, you know, there might be a lot of things that they're quite confused about. And you don't have to be the oracle. You don't need to know everything. You can just chat to them and then get a book. You know, there's books like Let's Talk About Body, Boundaries, Consent and Respect. That's a great book. Then we've got the Everybody book by Rachel Simon. And then if it's actually you who'd like to know more and you feel like you could really do a brushing up, some good books are for adults. Enjoy Sex, How, When and If You Want. That's by Meg John Barker.
Great.
There's loads of resources out there to learn more so that you'll be able to talk to your 11-year-old and not expect yourself to either know everything or to feel completely comfortable when you're doing it, but certainly to be able to have the conversations rather than that child to be going around not having a clue what's going on.
You don't want that.
You don't want that.
We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we have more Q&A with Rachel Cook, our relationship and sex therapist, and we're going to talk premature ejaculation and sexless marriages. Don't go anywhere. Yes, we are back. I'm here with Rachel Cook, our relationship expert and sex therapist, and we're having a bit of a Q&A of what you guys want to discuss and the problems you're encountering. Now, I got a text in. It says, "Hi, I have suffered with premature ejaculation for most of my life. I am now 38. Do I need a sex therapist, Rachel?"
Well, I would say start off by going to see your GP to figure out if there's any physical issues. Usually it's not physical, but in a small number of cases it is. So okay, it can be good to rule that out first. And then, well, you only need to go and see a doctor or a therapist if it's a problem for you. You know, there is quite a specific definition of premature ejaculation, but also I have encountered a lot of people of all genders who see anything less than sort of 20 minutes of being able to have penetrative sex as a premature ejaculation, and that it is not. You know, usually it only takes people 3 to 5 minutes of, you know, direct stimulation to orgasm, to ejaculate, unless they are actively trying to hold that back or delay that.
Okay.
So, you know, got to figure out, is it actually premature ejaculation? Is it causing you, you know, suffering in some way? Is it causing problems in your relationships with people? If it's not, don't worry about it. If it is, go to your GP and then go to a sex therapist.
Good advice. Jen, when you speak to the sex therapist, can you ask about this? We stopped having sex nearly 10 years ago. How to get back? We love each other, but we're not really sure what happened. Like, we have no interest, but yet I kind of want to. So probably a common problem in long-term relationships. How do people go about this?
Very common, and having that kind of contradiction of, on one hand, we've no interest, and on another, we would quite like to, either because you remember how fun it used to be. You enjoy having sex. It's nice to feel sensual and present when it is good. You know, so I think also with age, and especially when you're staying with with one person, it's just difficult to maintain that level of desire over time.
It's a bit like a treadmill. Like, when you get off, it's really hard to get back on.
Exactly.
It's a bit like that.
It is.
Okay, so any tips or advice?
But it's also like a bike, right? You get back on and it's easy enough to get riding, you know? So I'd say probably start by doing something like that. This person hasn't shared, like, do they both masturbate? If they do masturbate still, start by masturbating together. Have a bit of crack with that. See if you find that a bit of a turn on. Chat about what might feel the easiest for you to get back into it. You don't have to go big guns to begin with. Or maybe what you'd like is to start by chatting about fantasies, either that you used to have or ones that you can maybe have now. So there are loads of little ways that you can start to do that without needing to feel like a massive amount of pressure or that something specific has to be achieved. Just start having a play around with each other. Make it a bit sexy.
Text just in the last couple of seconds. I fell in love with my best friend. Oh, this is so gorgeous. After he told me he had a crush on me and everything is going so well. We're so in love and I feel so loved. But sometimes I suffer from relationship anxiety I'm attributing to a previous heartbreak. Any advice?
Oh, start journaling about this. If it seems like it's really taking over, you're really preoccupied with it and it's stopping you from engaging in your relationship, then absolutely go talk to someone about that. See a therapist. That's a great space to do that. But just journaling can be a really good way to look at this. Like, what is it that I'm frightened of? You know, relationship anxiety, or some people will even, there's the term now, relationship OCD or ROCD, can be where you go into these sort of compulsive ruminating thoughts or cycles. battles about the fear of your relationship ending, the fear of not being good enough for your partner, the fear of them leaving you or cheating on you. You know, check in with how is that manifesting? What are the thoughts? What are the feelings? Is it generally fear? Is it shame? Is it inadequacy? Just check in with what's going on for yourself, both from a physical sensation point of view. Like, is it that you get a dropping in your stomach? Is it that your heart starts beating really fast? Is it that you notice that you sort of don't want to look your partner in the eyes when it's happening? What are the feelings? And then what are the thoughts that are going along with that? That can be really helpful to help you detach from, this is something that is important to me. You obviously, they're having a great time together. And it's very normal for parts of us to just be absolutely terrified that it's going to end in some way. So, you know, very normal, and also can be really distracting, preoccupying, and, you know, just draining. So I would say,
I suppose they've acknowledged it. They're aware of it, which is probably the hardest step and the biggest step to take, first of all.
Definitely.
Listen to this, Rachel. Could Rachel look at the concept of being asexual and how, this is interesting, and how relationships can work with an asexual person and a non-asexual person?
Yeah.
That's from Lisa. How can that work?
That can work. It can definitely work. You know, people will often say, well, how could that possibly work? Well, the thing is, just because someone is asexual, asexuality is an orientation, like being straight or gay or bisexual or whatever else. And so, like, asexual doesn't mean that you can't have sex or that you don't ever have sex. It doesn't mean that you should or that you have to. But just because someone's orientation is asexual doesn't mean that they don't choose to have sex. Now, some people say, again, like we talked about compromise earlier, they might say, well, is that not really bad for someone to be having sex when they don't even want to? And it's like, well, this happens whether people are asexual or not. There is always negotiation and compromise in relationships. You're always going to find that one person wants more sex, likes certain things more, likes to have sex at a certain time of day. And so, of course, there might be a level at which it is a deal breaker and you're just fundamentally incompatible. But the more that you can chat about what you're up for trying, what you're up for doing, and when, and how you can make that feel like it. There's a balance of each person getting what they want and what they need, then it can absolutely work.
Okay.
Yeah.
Please leave anon. This is for Rachel's sex therapy session. This email came in. Before starting a relationship with someone suffering from kidney failure who regularly has dialysis, is there anything I should be aware of or anything that could be done to help them climax?
Yeah, so basically, if sexual activity doesn't place pressure or tension on the access site for the dialysis, you're pretty good. Although people who are on dialysis or have kidney failure often experience depression and anxiety. Interestingly, especially the more that they have of the toxin interleukin, I think it's pronounced, in their blood, that's well researched. So I would say talk to your partner, check in with how they're doing. Are they feeling a lot of anxiety? Some people's libido absolutely tanks when they have kidney failure and they're on dialysis. For some people with vaginas, sometimes it causes a lot of vaginal dryness, sexual pain. It can also cause trouble orgasming for people with penises. It can cause erectile dysfunction and also trouble orgasming. So loads of lube and Viagra, Cialis, if that works for you and you want to try that out.
Hi Jen, let's go to a relationship-y one. I'm absolutely loving your show. I'm going out with my boyfriend for the past 4 years. Is it normal to go weeks without having sex? We don't live together just yet, but we do see each other a lot. Okay, our relationship is perfect, but I'm afraid this could be something to pick up on. Is it a sign of losing interest, or maybe I'm reading into this too much? Is this normal? Please, can you not mention my name? I won't. Thank God I didn't. So they're in a relationship. Everything is perfect. They're not having a lot of sex.
Super normal. Super normal. You know, it's like, if that's a problem, if it's a problem for one or both people, again, a bit like with the premature ejaculation, most of us assume that there is this like standard of normality, and there just isn't. As long as something is comfortable for you and it's not hurting other people, that's grand. That's all right. You know, some people will have sex every day that they see each other for years and years and years, decades. Some people don't ever have sex at all. Some people have sex once a month. Usually the people in couples will find that it shifts over time as well, that there might be periods where they have a lot more sex than others, and that can be down to all sorts of manner of things, you know, stress at work, having children, changing job, whatever else it might be. So I would say talk to your partner, check in with yourself first. Is it okay for you? And also your definition of sex. Again, are you specifically talking about penetrative sex, or is there ways that you could be engaging that feel less time or energy intensive that might involve, for instance, just using a toy on one person or masturbating together, where you can feel still very sexually connected and it not need to be such a bells and whistles of the full thing.
Speaking of the bells and whistles and the standards, something really interesting you said there about the majority of problems that have come in today tend to all go back to this one thing, and that is we all have this perceived standard of what sex should be and
Absolutely.
Relationships should be, and that is messing it up for a lot of people. It's really interesting that it's what we perceive. Is that through porn and media and TV and romantic films that were all a little bit messed up?
Of those things, all societal, cultural, and that changes over time. The definitions of what love is, how that has changed, you know, our definitions of success in relationships changing so quickly. And, you know, body image and what's seen as being attractive. You know, there is just so much change, and it's impossible to keep up with it. And obviously we're all just going around trying to feel like we're basically being decent human beings and that we're normal enough that people aren't going to, you know, ostracize us and completely abandon us. So it makes a lot of sense, but it's a bit like we talked about with the labels. You know, if the label or the definition or the standard of normality, as you might call it, works for you and helps you to feel more okay, then great. If it doesn't, do away with it. You don't need that in your life.
And it all comes down to communication with whoever you're having sex with. If they're okay with it and you're okay with it, then everybody's okay. Thank you so much for the Q&A. It's still a lot coming in. We might do this again next week. If there's anything you want me to put to Rachel Cook, please get in touch with the show. You can mail me jen@rte.ie. Rachel Cook, psychotherapist and mental health consultant. Thank you so much for that. You can follow Rachel on Instagram @RachelJaneCook, and she will be back next week. So get your questions in, jen@rte.ie. You can also text me 51552.
Jennifer Zamparelli on 2FM.